When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, we are not releasing an episode this week as we're taking a break for Easter. So instead, we are playing an episode about the original Beetlejuice that we recorded in 2022 for our Patreon. And we're now going to share here in honor of the fact that the new Beetlejuice trailer has just dropped. And we spend a lot of time in this episode talking about why a new Beetlejuice wouldn't happen. So we were wrong. Anyway, enjoy.
Oh, hi, it's the Cinemile High Club.
Hello.
And it's you, the Cinemile High Club patrons slash listeners slash voters in this month's retro movie.
Come, Mr. Malama, give me your banana. Daylight, come, and me one go home.
Is a day, yo.
Daylight, come, and me one go home.
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot punch.
Anyway.
That's the cinema. Thanks for listening. We talked, that's all you need to know about Beetlejuice. So we'll backtrack slightly. So we moved house and we got a lot of suggestions from lovely listeners and slash patrons such as Graham, Jack Naven and John McNallahan, who is tempting Kathy's ire again. By sending suggestions on Twitter. Her least favourite thing.
I love Twitter. I just can't believe he does the patron that way.
How dare you, John? How dare you communicate outside of the proper channels? So they suggested movies about moving house or moving home. So that's exactly what we did. And you guys came up with a number of great suggestions, which we
whittled
down to
six. Though
some
people did point out that Beetlejuice are not moving home, they're moving house.
Yes, but if you had read the very specific rules that I had written, Kathy, it said...
I did read them. I just
can be a movie about either moving house or returning to your hometown after a long period away.
Okay.
So moving house is also moving home. You're moving your home.
Yeah, but they meant moving home as in moving back to where you come from.
Did they, though? I set the rules here. That's what I said. So this fits the bill.
And what other movies were on there?
Well, there was actually three moving house movies and three moving home movies, if you want to.
Why are you looking at me like that? Dave is looking at me like he's a barrister in court who's just brought in damning evidence.
I submit to the court these six items. Exhibit A, The Money Pit. Exhibit B, Gross, Point Blank. Exhibit B, C, The Quiet Man. Then Beetlejuice, The Orphanage, and House Sitter. This
all
surprised
good
me. All well, I haven't actually seen House Sitter.
And
it had the most suggestions by far. But it seems like the 9% of people that voted for it were the people who suggested it. Nobody else wanted to watch it.
I wanted to watch House Sitter. I love it, but I haven't seen it in like a really long time. And I think it might be one of those things where like, less people suggest than vote.
Yeah, so, and I thought Money Pit would have this, to be honest.
It's like an exit like poll, obvious, you know, after the election when everyone says, I didn't vote for the Tories, and yet there they are in power again.
They're there for years and years.
I wonder if some people, though, would have voted for House Sitter, saw that I didn't have a hope of winning, and then flipped their vote, aka what I would do.
Yeah, a couple of people commented that...
it's a spoiled vote.
Yeah, they voted for the thing. Anyway, Beetlejuice won. Barely over Gross Point Blank. It was really close. I would have been happy to watch either.
I didn't want to watch Gross
Point
Blank.
Team Beetlejuice.
I'm not a John Cusack person and we watched him really recently for this already.
High Fidelity, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah.
I have a lot of time for Gross Point Blank. It's a great movie. But here we are, Beetlejuice, and I'm very excited. This is... possibly my favourite Tim Burton movie, I gotta say.
I love Beetlejuice.
I think it is. I think it's quintessential Tim Burton. I think it was him at the height of his powers.
I think quintessential is not the right word now. I haven't seen Beetlejuice in a fairly long time, so I'm like dying to rewatch it now. I'm really excited, and we're going to rent it on Apple TV Plus. Plug. But we're just plugging them now as much as we can.
Pay us, Apple. Let us be in your pocket.
But the... in my head, it's peak best Tim Burton, but it's not quintessential Tim Burton.
Oh, okay.
For
tell me
quintessential.
Tell me what the difference is. Then.
This is when he peaked, but But he fell and plummeted down. What are you doing? He fell and plummeted then. Sorry. Dave's just now.
IMDb is playing something. I was trying to. Sorry.
I think he.
Please continue.
To me, quintessential Tim Burton is Helena Bonham Carter, Johnny Depp, and frankly, I don't want to watch it.
But hang on, isn't the quintessential the definition, like that's the thing you have to watch? That's the
I thought quintessential is like what captures the essence of someone, and what captures the essence of Tim Burton is Johnny Depp, Helena Bonham Carter, and he's gone too far.
Well, okay, we can spend all day splitting hairs over, and I don't know, and you can message us below us what these things mean. But I completely agree with you when you think Tim Burton nowadays. Firstly, you roll your eyes.
Dave, you say nowadays, this was over to it. This was like 24, 25 years ago.
Yeah, well, let me finish. Okay. When you say the name Tim Burton nowadays, mm-hmm. I roll my eyes and then I go, say all the names you just said. Mm-hmm. I was like, here we go. Johnny Depp, Helena Bonham Carter, like whatever. The thing you're describing became...
It's like his second wave filmmaking.
He typecast himself.
Yeah.
And also I just had a run of really kind of, I don't know, samey sort of. By the time we got to fucking Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, I think I was done with Tim Burton and the whole shtick.
Yeah. But this is back to his peak.
This prime. Is what it means, quintessential.
Yeah. Well, so, I hope it lives up to it now.
Yeah, this is a great movie. Michael Keaton, who was kind of his Johnny Depp in sorts with he did Batman as well with him. You've got Winona Ryder, who is another one of his muses, who else?
I can't remember. Let's watch the movie and then come back.
Oh yeah, let's talk about the movie
because I haven't seen
afterwards.
It in so long. I'm pumped to watch it. I just remember like that song that we were just singing. I know that I always liked it, and I know that you can.
Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis.
You can't say Beetlejuice three times.
Yeah.
Well, someone did play around with that in the comments, which I appreciated. Thanks, guys.
Right, so let's go watch Beetlejuice. Hope you're all going to watch
it with us.
And
we just spotted it's only 90 minutes long, so we're fucking
ecstatic.
It's
the perfect duration of a movie, so we'll see you in 90 minutes.
And also just like peak 80s vibes, which I'm here for.
Bye-o. Going to watch Beetlejuice and stick it on now.
Wow.
Come, Mr. Appleman, give me all your sponsorships.
From the director of Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Adam and Barbara are
ghosts. What's the good of being a ghost if you can't frighten people away?
Their house is being haunted by the living.
Maybe the house could use a little remodeling.
And they can't scare them into leaving.
They're dead. It's a little late to be neurotic.
So they're calling on Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice!
Who's no ordinary ghost.
Yeah, you don't want his help.
Can you be scary?
What do you think of this?
Now, the party's over.
You want somebody out of the house, I want to get somebody out of your house.
But the fun has just begun.
It's showtime.
Throw your voice, fool your friends, fun and party.
Not bad.
This is amazing.
You want a cigarette?
Oh, no, thank you.
Oh, yeah, here I come, baby.
He's guaranteed to put some life...
Attention, King Word Shoppers.
...in your afterlife. Michael Keaton... is Beetlejuice.
I'm the ghost with the most, babe.
My girl's name is Senora.
I tell your friends I adore her. And when she dances, oh brother, she's a hurricane in all kinds of weather.
Jump in the line.
Rock your body in time.
Oh yeah.
I believe you. It's okay, I believe you.
Oh, someone's giving away the game that you're reading the lyrics off your phone.
Oh, that was fun.
So... that was fun.
I believe you.
Spoilers for Beetlejuice.
The 1988 movie.
Yes. That's a great.
That was a great watch.
It's really fun. It's 90 minutes. It's weird and wacky and kind
of. So fun and creative and.
It's funny. It's really funny.
Yeah. And sweet, actually. It has quite a sweet ending that I don't recall it being.
There's a kind of a sweet through line. It's really. Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis and Winona Ryder's movie, and Michael Keaton is not really in it. I've done some fun facts with this, and here's an early one. Beetlejuice is in 17 minutes of this movie. 17 and a half minutes.
Yeah, I was kind of like, when's Beetlejuice like, coming into it?
He's not. It's not really about him. He's kind of the antagonist in a way. But what I think other things to love about this movie.
I want to be like Barbara and Adam when we die.
Oh yeah, and just live in this house. Not necessarily.
I just think we'd like hanging out with each other for that long.
It's a great concept. This idea of like dying in a house, then being forced to watch someone move in and like criticize your taste.
But also they're like really specific, like specifics, like, oh yeah, like when you die, you have to haunt your house for 125 years.
That's what I like about this movie. This whole idea of like the afterlife being like a bureaucracy, right? And that idea. You know, a waiting room and paperwork and a handbook. That idea has always been so interesting to me that it actually like inspired me to like start writing a novel or like around hell as a bureaucracy a long time ago, which I abandoned.
And I enjoyed your drafts. But it's like that's like a fun like textural like world building thing that this does. But at the core, it's a really interesting idea of like. You or you and your partner, you and your family, you and your friends have this perfect life. Like they're so happy at the beginning of the movie. They're like, their dream is to be on vacation for 2 weeks in this house.
Yeah.
And then they die.
They're great. They're a really cute, they have such believable good chemistry. Couple, they're, Alec Baldwin and Gina James.
They're amazing. And it's like, all we want to do is stay in our house. And then it's like, well, you're here now. But it's so funny because they live in this huge, huge house, right? And they have like a huge attic to live in even when the house is occupied. Imagine you lived in a studio flat. And you have to haunt it for 125 years. But I kind of love the idea. But yeah, I find it amazing to watch. Like Gina Davis is just brilliant. And we watched A League of Their Own last year with her in it around this age. But with Alec Baldwin, recall Alec Baldwin. Like he's one of those actors who's nearly like more famous than... Like in my head, Alec Baldwin is like... Say 30 Rock. That's the Alec Baldwin I picture. Well, so Alec, like when I watch him, I don't recognize him in this movie.
Alec Baldwin is one of those actors who's been around for such a long time that his career and has you can split it into phases. He kind of, I think 30 Rock kind of reinvented him as this sort of a comedic actor. I mean, he's quite quick comedic in this, to be fair.
But he's kind of normal in this. Whereas in other things that I think of him in later life, he's much bigger than life and
yeah,
like
yeah, yeah,
he
yeah.
has the voice in this movie like he had his voice is his voice but his voice is so exaggerated now compared to this. Like do you ever listen to his podcast?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's
yeah.
like and his podcast is really good by the way, but yeah, this is like him just being normal and being sweet and being goofy, and that's not something I now associate with Alec Baldwin at all.
What is impressive from Alec Baldwin's point of view in this movie is it shows what a good actor he is, that the like ridiculously handsome peak like Alec Baldwin who looks like a Ken doll in this movie somehow portrays a believable dweeb.
That's what's surprising to me. He's not someone I think could play a dweeb now. He actually couldn't.
But in this movie even he shouldn't have been able to play a dweeb. He was like also like an action hero at the time. Yes, but that's what I mean. His whole physique and personality, like his body movements portray awkward dweeb who's into like models and you know like DIY and wears glasses at the end of his nose. Like I believed it.
Yeah.
While also he's like this like ridiculous looking like guy.
He's kind of normal looking though. Like I wouldn't like he didn't look like a Hollywood movie star. He looked like a handsome normal guy.
But he is also and was a Hollywood movie star at that time and has Hollywood movie star looks.
So was he really famous then?
I don't know. I can't speak to the
when was Glenn Ross
of Alec Baldwin's success. That was many years later in the 90s.
Right, so maybe this was his big break. We're speculating now. If only one of us had done fun facts.
I mean, look, this is what I hate about doing these things, right? I pull some very specific facts about this movie and then you throw me some curveballs like, Dave, what was the year that Alec Baldwin's career really took off?
I don't
have the answer to that.
It's been eclipsed again. His voice is... In my head, because we've seen a lot of Boss Baby in our house, like I just picture the baby from Boss Baby. Whereas Gina Davis is one of those actresses who's always been very consistent, and even like in later years when she was in Grey's Anatomy, recently, she's still very similar, whereas I can't get past how different he is. Winona Ryder is cast to type very effectively.
She is basically just Winona Ryder in this. These are the kind of roles that she's most famous for, I think, these sort of just really dark, skirting on the edge of sort of the abyss and staring into it. And
but also just playing the awkward teen. She plays the awkward teen very well. Like, this could be a prequel to Mermaids, except that a mermaid share is her mom and she doesn't live in a haunted house. But she's just like, this is her jam at the time, for want of a better word. But like, to see Winona Ryder and Michael Keaton in scenes together made me think, like, these were two actors that was their prime. She was a lot younger, but that was them both at their kind of peak powers.
Michael Keaton and Winona Ryder
in this movie.
I would argue Michael Keaton has done some really great work in the past 20 years.
No, he has. But yeah, I'm just saying that was them both at that, like, the peak moment of their careers almost. They kind of coexisted in this movie together. It was such a phenomenon. Having them together is so cool. It made me think of when we went to see Birdman in the cinema, and that must have been about 10 years ago. That moment of being like, oh my God, we're back in the cinema, Michael Keaton's in a really cool movie. Like,
yeah,
how long kind of anticipated that had been. But Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice, it's almost like, I almost remember it as being bigger than what it actually is when I watched the movie.
Well, he did a lot with 17 minutes. He's very memorable. I mean, this movie, I'll get to it in a minute, was like so successful financially, but I feel like it had real pop culture impact.
It really, like, did.
To the point where a load of the things that the sort of moments that happen in this movie got made into toys. Like, I, as a child, never saw this movie, but I had Beetlejuice toys. Like, you know when Gina Davis picks up the tiny Beetlejuice, and then she's holding him in his hand, and then spikes come out of him, and she has to drop him. Like, I had a toy where, like, spikes would come in and out of Beetlejuice. Like, it's actually mental when you think of the world we live in now, where all toys are produced by Disney, for instance, that we grew up in a time when Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, maybe not that crazy, but like Beetlejuice was a marketable property to children.
But like, I saw kind of a stat recently crazy, that, like, right? I don't know where you got the Meet Beetlejuice toy from, but I saw a stat recently, and I don't know if it's true or not, I caveat this, but I saw it somewhere that at one point in time McDonald's had been like the biggest toy manufacturer in the world. And it might have been true. Like, they brought out toys for basically every movie that was in the cinema, didn't they?
And what's funny is that Michael Keaton then went on to play the founder of McDonald's in a movie.
Oh, yeah. But you know what is so creative about this movie? Like, and I can't nearly wrap my head around it, because we were saying the movie kind of doesn't stick to its own rules necessarily. Like, why
that if
does the Beetlejuice rule, live in the toy village?
The rule
I can't get
is,
my head around that.
I don't know. He's been trapped and he's trying to break out. Look,
but they never said it. Beetlejuice read about them in the newspaper, which I love, right? So he's reading the welcome.
The obituaries.
What's normally the obituaries,
welcome,
but it's the welcome in their newspaper, which I absolutely love.
Some lovely ideas.
And then he's like, oh, that looks good, I want to haunt them. And then next minute he's like in their little model village. And then when they say Beetlejuice, 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 he jumps up. But why is he already there?
Well, look, you kept asking me these questions throughout the course of the movie, and I just, like, I said to you, look, normally I am happy to pick a movie apart, but with something like this, it's kind of like you just have to accept that in the afterlife they can contort their faces or do whatever. They're just ghosts, and like, that's the answer to every question. They can do whatever the fuck they want, basically, right?
Yeah, but
so it's not necessarily narratively satisfying. And
but within your own world, doesn't everything have to make sense?
Yeah, but they apply some rules to it, right? There's some rules.
I remember the bit.
There's a handbook, but I guess
the handbook and the bit with them drawing the door on the wall, for some reason, that really stuck with me when I was a kid and I watched it. So I thought that was all more of the movie, actually, kind of thing, of them figuring out the handbook. And I feel like, sorry now, if I had just died and had nothing else to do, I'd have read a bit more of the book.
But I like the idea that they said it's like reading a, what did he say, a stereo player manual, which is such a outdated.
Yeah, expression. And like Winona Ryder can kind of follow the book, but they
very
can't.
Very technical, they couldn't really follow it. They're kind of homely, sort of down to earth kind of people. They just couldn't crack this handbook, which I love. But I love this idea of like, you die and then there's no afterlife to go to. It's just here's a book, off you go.
I loved it when they get to the afterlife and they meet like their handler, the woman who's awesome, and then they also get a little bit of a tour.
Excellent.
They get a bit of a tour and they see these kind of horrifically floating like spirits that kind of look like dementors, and they're like, oh, they're the ghosts who've been exorcised, they're the dead.
Yeah,
and that's actually really scary. Then I thought they were going to bring in
that's
a plot.
What's going happening to them later.
That's what I was. I thought they were going to bring in an exorcising plot, but then I couldn't. They didn't.
That's what's happening. That's what Otho was doing to them.
Oh,
without realizing it,
because they didn't say it. I didn't get it.
They kind of set that up.
But the haunting scene when they're doing
Deo.
That's so good.
It's so fun.
It was as good as I remember.
What I love about this movie is the attempts increasingly desperate attempts of the main couple to haunt these people, and the reactions never go as they want.
Like, I love the way the stepmom's just taking loads of Valium or whatever, and
Catherine O'Hara is
so
fantastic
good.
In this movie.
She's a little bit like her Schitt's Creek character, actually, but she's just like, it's so 80s as well, like how she's dressed. I love when they redecorate the house and it's turned into like a New York loft, but in this haunted mansion or whatever.
But even though their characters are really entertaining and funny, this modern art sort of obsessed sort of New York types, mm-hmm. and this conflict with the country. Then the husband, who's this just like, this guy who's just obsessed with the idea of relaxing, but literally unable to relax, like doesn't
know
how to
do it. Because he has some sort of nerve problem, they said. Was it just me, or was it a massive trope in the late 80s, 90s for there to be a gay best friend / decorator? It was in so many movies.
Yeah, potentially. I think you're thinking Father of the Bride, probably, as
I'm thinking of loads of things. And it's just like, I really enjoyed his character as well, though, and I enjoyed him. I enjoyed the scenes where they were trying to have, before the dinner party went wild, when they were trying to have like a normal dinner party with like guests and speak to each other, and how horrible everyone was to each other at the dinner party.
It's really good.
Like, their friendship group is so awful and her agent was so horrible to her.
And the decor of the house, like Tim Burton became very synonymous with a sort of an aesthetic, right? And I think he worked with a lot of the same production
designers.
This
was kind of an early version of that. It wasn't too much.
But it's still also wild and out there, but it really works. I think it kind of became tiresome after
a while.
It's like
restrained Tim Burton.
Yeah.
Do you know what is like kind of the evolution of this? Is that Tim Burton cartoon it makes me think of?
The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Those kind of cartoons he did, which were like probably a really like further down the storyboard version of this house. Like, this house is spooky and has weird stuff going on.
They're very alike. They actually have the same writer, I believe.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise
Michael
me.
Michael McDowell. He adapted The Nightmare Before Christmas.
And we need to talk about what happens when they step outside the front door, and what happens is it's the worst CGI we've ever seen.
Well, I think
remember as a kid watching it and being like, that looks terrible.
Here's a good segue then to the fun facts, because I've got one on this, right?
Okay.
So the budget for this movie was $15 million, right? Which isn't a lot, even for the time, right?
Yeah, I was saying that today, like, in the other things in the 80s were still hold up, like this does not.
Well, here's the thing. They put only $1 million of that was put to visual effects work. So $1 million even in 1988, it's not going to get you a lot. And the scale of them included like the stop motion. That's everything, including the prosthetic makeups, the puppetry, the blue screen. Like, that has to cover quite a lot of
stuff. Makeup goes a long way in this film. The makeup's brilliant.
Well, the makeup won an Oscar.
That
so this movie won an
me.
Oscar for best makeup, and absolutely deservedly so.
Particularly that scene, and I don't know if it's makeup or prosthetics, but when they are being exercised or whatever and they're in their wedding outfit, it's really sad. It's a sad scene, and that's when you see that Winona Ryder's parents are actually like, stop this is horrible, like,
yeah,
nobody wants to see this couple.
I love the resolution where they all figure out how to learn to live with each other.
Yeah,
there's something
I love the
there's something in that thematically, which is an interesting lesson for the sort of times we live in, and sort of the sort of completely polarized opinions of the sort of internet and the culture wars. This idea of just two disparate groups forced to live together.
Well, I don't know if they're ideologically disparate though, or if just like, it kind of suits them because they wanted a kid.
I mean,
right?
I'm just applying this plot of this movie to something that's happening today.
They wanted a kid, right? That's made clear at the beginning.
I'm not and then, saying they're literally like having culture wars in that house.
They wanted a kid, which is made clear at the beginning. And then Winona Ryder's parents like blatantly have no interest in her. So it actually worked out really well. They basically got free fucking nannies and tutors because they do maths lessons with them. They like celebrate her tests and then the parents get off scot-free.
And I like that ending and it's a lovely, lovely little ending and she does the little dance.
Like, however, if I was going to have a ghost, I'd want them to be a childminder.
However... it really disturbed me when Gina Davis kept calling her a little girl throughout the movie. Well, even I though think she's 17 years old.
No, but the actress is, but I'd say she's playing...
maybe she's playing a little bit lower, but would you... What's the youngest age range do you think she's passing for here? 13, 14? Like, little girl is not appropriate in any context. But in an original draft of this movie, there was a 9-year-old sister. There was a younger child who was 9. So I wonder, is it a hangover from that?
No, I think it's because they're trying to tell us, oh, she's really young. And there's that, I think they're also using that language for Gina Davis because
jars with me.
Well, I also think they're using that language from Gina Davis. It doesn't jar with me, actually, because she's very protective of her. When she meets Beetlejuice, realizes what a creep she is, the first thing she says is, I want to keep him away from that little girl. And that's how I would refer, if I was around a creepy older man, I would in my head think of a girl as being really young and that I needed to protect her. Yeah. And that language made sense to me.
No, that's fine. However, she, that the first time she called her a little girl predates that.
Okay. Why are you so adamantly upset about this?
It just really jars with me.
Didn't jar with me at all.
It's like
she's convinced she's playing 14.
She's infantilizing her when she's clearly like a teenager on the edge. She writes a suicide note at one point.
Yeah, but she's clearly a little girl looking for some parenting. Look how happy she is at the end when she gets, like, she takes off her black veil and gets on the back of a bike and makes friends. Like, yeah. She just actually was looking for a mother figure, I guess.
Yeah.
And okay, it's implied facts. That she's in mourning and potentially her mom might have just died. I think that's going on as well.
Yeah, you could read that into it. Right, back to the fun facts, right? So $1 million for all that stuff, but...
$14 million for Michael Keaton's
budget. But Tim Burton said that he deliberately wanted to keep it with a B-movie aesthetic, right? He wanted to make the style similar to the B-movies he grew up with as a child.
So yeah, it looks B-movie.
So he's quoted here saying that I wanted to make... the practical effects look cheap and purposefully fake looking.
Yeah.
Okay, which is quite interesting. And I think job done, because they do look kind of cheap.
It worked, but it works. It
really suits the aesthetic.
And it's cartoonish.
But it also feels like they did good work with that $1 million. Like, they really made it work.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear some alternative casting? Because there's some cracking ones.
Tell me Johnny Depp for this movie. Beetlejuice.
No, he doesn't appear. So
if Johnny Depp was in this movie, by the way, I wouldn't have watched it.
Is mental. Okay, Tim Burton's original choice for Beetlejuice was Sammy Davis Jr. from The Rat Pack.
Okay, that I would love to see. That's amazing. He would have been quite old.
Well, no, 1988, right? The height of them was in the 60s, so not massively. I mean, I don't have it to hand.
He's in a lot of makeup.
The studio also considered Dudley Moore, which I think could have worked.
No.
Alternatives. Yeah, he's got the mad capery. He would have fit into it. Sammy Davis. I don't know. It's just such a departure from what we got with Michael Keaton. I'm finding it kind of hard to picture it. I guess he'd be more smooth and suave, less than perverted and gross.
But see, I don't know what Sammy Davis Jr. is like. I literally couldn't judge. I've only ever seen him singing.
Yeah.
Or like in that, when we watched the original Ocean's 11.
Here's some good ones. Alternatives for Lydia, the daughter character.
Let me guess.
There's a long list of just up and coming
80s ingenue.
Ingenues, yeah. Ingenue is the right word. Are you joking?
No, I'm just thinking
Brooke
of 80s.
Brooke Shields is on this list.
I'm just thinking of hot 80s young
absolutely
things.
Absolutely nailed it. Right, who else you got? Yeah, think of just people who just became famous and were
Demi
young
Moore.
About it. No, you got any more? Oh, you started so strong.
I started really strong with Brooke Shields. Sarah Jessica Parker.
Yes! Jessica Parker was auditioned for this.
Helen Hunt.
No. We had the Rat Pack a minute ago. Think the Brat Pack, as they were called.
Oh, of course. Alison Sheedy, or whatever her name is, from
the other
Breakfast
one.
Club. Molly Ringwald.
Yeah, Molly Ringwald.
Oh, but the one Alison, I can't remember her name, but the other girl from the Breakfast Club, she would have been more of the Winona Ryder vibe.
Yeah, Molly Ringwald auditioned. I'll just reel off the rest of them. Diane Lane, Juliette Lewis, who I think I could see in this.
God, it's literally a who's who.
Which actually, Julia Lewis in Yellow Jackets is kind of vibing on this sort of both her younger version and older version.
Yeah.
Jennifer Connelly. So this is around the time of Labyrinth.
Mm-hmm, I see that.
And but eventually it was down to two of them, and it was Winona Ryder won it over Alyssa Milano, who went on to be in Charmed and several other things.
And Arnie's
daughter in
of course, who could ever
Commando,
forget?
Of course. In that brilliant opening montage where they eat ice cream.
I mean, it had to be Winona, right? It was hers to lose.
Some other great cast.
Was this Winona's breakout role? Not to put you on the spot again.
No. Lucas is the movie that Tim Burton saw her in and then wanted her for the
part. So presumably she went from this into Edward Scissorhands then.
I think Edward Scissorhands is next, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Other casting for the mother, Kirstie Alley was supposed to play her.
I could see that. I actually think you could swap them out and it would be the same performance.
Yeah, I could. She'd have done a good
job. Not to criticize. I just think they're very similar actresses.
But she couldn't get out of Cheers, which she was in at the time. And then they cast Angelica Houston.
Yeah, I can see that.
Which is basically Adam's Family vibes, right? But then she had to drop out due to illness, and that's when they brought Catherine O'Hara in.
But wouldn't you be so annoyed if you missed out on a movie like this?
But they had also considered... Well, she did get to do Adam's Family, which is pretty much...
Yeah.
I think solidified her goth
style.
They had also considered the studio Laura Dern, who I think... Well, she's an amazing
actress.
She's
too young, though. She would have been too young.
Yeah, maybe a little young. Although Catherine O'Hara is young in this. Goldie Hawn. I think 100% would have
done it. Yeah. She should have done it.
And then two interesting ones, Linda Hamilton and Sigourney Weaver.
I just don't see them being
bit
like
left field.
Valium.
I can't see them as
artists of like rich. Like, I don't.
And also,
I don't see
Catherine O'Hara brings a sort of a mad, frenetic sort of energy.
Yeah.
Like that, she's so highly strung and anxious.
Yeah, that Kirstie Alley has as well.
Sigourney Weaver's just too cool, and Linda Hamilton is kind of a bit of the same. But look, who knows what they would have done with it? Warner Brothers didn't like the title Beetlejuice, which I kind of say fair enough. What the fuck is that?
Why didn't they spell it like he spells it in the show?
I don't have the answer to that, and I couldn't find the answer.
Okay.
But it's probably, that's probably studio phonetic notes, like, oh, people won't know.
In fairness, you have to be able to read the word.
They wanted to call it House Ghosts, obviously the most bland, boring title ever.
House Ghosts. I think that's an iconic title. House Ghosts.
So terrible. And as a joke, Tim Burton suggested the name Scared Sheetless. And said
that
apparently
like
he was horrified
movie
when the studio actually considered using it. Catherine O'Hara, this is a fun fact, met her future husband on this movie, production designer Bo Welch.
Oh, wow. I never, you always wonder if, the talent talked to, the crew on movies like this.
Here's the thing.
This before or after Home Alone?
Bo Welch... that was 1990.
Right.
Bo Welch apparently didn't really interact with any of them and was a bit nervous, but Tim Burton encouraged him to ask her out after production had finished.
Oh my god, that's so sweet. Are they still married?
I don't know.
Don't give me a romantic story without the ending.
I hope so. Beetlejuice was a huge financial hit. It earned $8 million in its opening weekend.
Holy shit.
One weekend,
in
it earned half its budget back, and it grossed $73 million in North America alone.
Wow.
That's incredibly profitable. It was the 10th highest grossing film of 1988 in the US. Do you want to hear what the other nine are?
100%.
I thought you might. I did prepare this.
Let me guess.
What do you think is number one? Well, hit me with any 1988 movies you think.
1988.
You think would be in the top 10.
I'm
sure everyone is. Come on, play along at home.
Wall Street.
No, not in the top 10.
Oh God, I'm trying to identify movies from this year.
Do you want some clues?
Predator.
Predator's not there, no.
Terminator 1.
That was the year before, I think. No, that was 1984.
Sorry, this is getting boring for the listeners.
All right, I'll give you some clues.
Okay.
There's a Tom Cruise movie here at number 9.
Risky Business.
Nope. Later than that. He plays a professional. No. He plays somebody who makes cocktails.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, Dave.
There's a this is actually amazing. There's a
girls just want to have fun.
There's a Tom Hanks comedy in here at number four.
The Bunny Pit.
No.
Big.
Big is here at number four. Look, I'll just list them off. This is probably not fun to listen to. Number nine, Cocktail. Number eight, Moonstruck. This is crazy, actually, when you read these off and you're like, how different the box office is.
They'd
now.
They'd never be in the cinema now. They'd be on Netflix.
There's no adaptations. There's very few sequels. They're all like, they're almost all original properties, and they're all comedies, most of them. Number nine, Cocktail. Yeah, number eight, Moonstruck. Number seven, Die Hard. I thought would be higher. Number six, Three Men and a Baby. Three Men and a Baby was a bigger hit than Die Hard that year.
But that makes sense because one's a family audience and one's not.
Oh yeah, it does. Except the next one, which earned more than both of them, is Crocodile Dundee 2. Crocodile Dundee 2.
I lived for that movie when I was a kid.
Made such big money.
We didn't just have that like recorded off the telly. Like we owned the real VHS of that. Like.
I know, that was the one where he came to America, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Big was number four. Good Morning Vietnam earned 122 million with Robert Williams. Like Robin Williams. Can you believe that is the third biggest?
I can, yeah. A war movie, yeah, I can.
Yeah, but it's like this. But it's like that just would not happen now. As you say, that just all goes to streaming services.
Yeah.
And then nobody watches them. It's kind of sad. Coming to America, number two, Eddie Murphy.
Which we watched the sequel to that last year, by the way. With
on
the
a streaming service.
Yeah, on Amazon. And we intended to do a review and we were just so underwhelmed by it. We never bothered.
And the number one movie of 1988.
Give me a clue.
I'll give you a clue.
Give me a genre.
I'll give you a clue. It is an animated sort of...
Little Mermaid.
Family friendly. No, that was 1 year later.
Roger Rabbit.
Yes. Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Number one.
I do want to see that.
Which is funny because me and Oscar just watched Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, which I recommend, by the way, to everyone on Disney Plus. And it's very in the Roger Rabbit vein and he actually is in it very briefly. So it won an Oscar in 1991. They made an animated show which ran for four seasons and I remember watching
as a kid. As well.
Later it was also adapted into a stage musical which ran for 2 years off Broadway in 2016 to 2018.
I can picture that.
And now here to finish is the story of the sequel that has never happened.
Oh my god.
The film was so successful.
So was this an original script though before you get to the sequel?
Yes, it was a script by I think Michael McDowell is the guy who originally wrote it, but it was much darker. Like, it was really dark. Like, they had a really gruesome death and she lost her arm and it was all fucking, like, mental. And was much more of a horror film. And then they brought in another writer whose name I don't have to hand to sort of punch it up. And he brought in all the musical stuff and all the comedy.
The musical stuff is what sticks with you. Like, it's a classic for those elements.
Yeah, he really punched it up. And I'm giving him no credit here because I don't have his name here.
You got his name. He's the script puncher.
The script puncher. Oh, my God. I'd watch a movie called that with Steven Seagal. So here's the story of the sequel. 1990 comes around and Tim Burton hires writer Jonathan Gems to write a sequel for this movie. And the movie's called Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian. Okay.
Oh my god.
I know, right?
This movie is not in any way open to a sequel. It ends so completely.
There are 32 years of sequel story here. And then he's on record as saying Tim thought it would be about this movie. He thought it would be funny to match the surfing backdrop of a beach movie with some sort of German expressionism. Because they're totally wrong together. And that's why that movie had that premise. The story apparently followed...
Yeah, that's the premise of like, at best, a short skit. Like.
Yeah, well, this was going to be at least a 90-minute movie following the Dietz family as they move to Hawaii, where Charles, the father, is developing... And by the way, if anyone's expecting the fact about Jeffrey Johns, that's not fun and it's not going to occur here. Where Charles is developing a... resort. So they soon discover that his company is building on the burial ground of an ancient Hawaiian kahuna.
But how would this... What's interesting about Beetlejuice is that it's... Everyone involved, bar Beetlejuice himself, is new to this scenario and is learning. How is it interesting to meet the same people again and have them meet new ghosts?
Because that is what you're describing is a creatively bankrupt sequel. Well, how do we get the same people in here and have a plot?
I would have thought what you
do... And the answer, Kathy...
No, but I would have thought you'd bring Beetlejuice, but to a new family. They're at least...
Clearly, the answer is you move the same family to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Ancient burial ground. And then the spirit comes back to cause trouble. But Beetlejuice becomes a hero... Just like Terminator 2, by winning...
Spoilers for Terminator 2.
By winning a surf contest with magic.
You're taking the piss out of me.
I'm reading this off Wikipedia.
This is a Tim Burton
and
movie.
Both Michael Keaton and Winona Ryder were on board. They were going to do it on the condition that Tim Burton directed. That was the only thing they would
and
do.
And on the condition that they read the script
and
first.
There was no script at the time. But then, I love this, Wikipedia just says... But both he and Keaton became distracted with Batman Returns.
I can't see why. I feel like they really missed out on Beetlejuice 2.
And Batman Returns is a cracking movie.
Batman Returns is one of my favourite
movies. So that movie, they get distracted and Beetlejuice 2 gets forgotten about until Warner Brothers bring it back on the agenda in 1996 and they hire Kevin Smith to write this, rewrite the script.
As in
Kevin Smith from Clerks and Jay and Silent Bob, yeah.
Right.
So kind of height of his powers, but then he turned it down to write another DC superhero, Superman Lives, which never happened. And Smith later joked that his response was, "Didn't we say all we needed to say in the first Beetlejuice? Must we go tropical?"
Also, when they came back to him in the late 90s, they still wanted it to be tropical.
Oh, it was Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian for about 15 years until early in the noughties, Tim Burton says, it's back on the agenda, 2012, we're going to do it. And it would have been fun with an aged
Michael Keaton.
And he said, clearly we'd already had some lame sequels by 2012. He was like, we're going to do it properly, no gimmicks. No, he parked all that and they were going to do it properly.
So not Michael Keaton on a surfboard.
And Winona Ryder is very keen. Well, of course, because she didn't have any roles.
The
character
then.
Is dear to her heart, and she like it'll be a grown up version of her. And then the sequel gets announced and like unannounced. They go on like in 2015, it was greenlit. They were talking about it on the talk show circuit
with Winona Ryder.
All of them, Winona Ryder and Michael Keaton both.
And I guess at that point, they both hadn't had their career resurgences. Was that pre Birdman, pre Stranger Things?
Pre Stranger Things, sure. I think Michael Keaton's been tipping around for a while. And then it's just kind of goes away and comes back again.
See, I feel like if it came back now with them, it would be interesting.
Well, the latest is that in February of this year, they announced the sequel again.
Mm-hmm.
So just 3 months ago. And again with Keaton and Ryder coming back. And they've scheduled principal photography to begin in the summer of this year, which is now. So whether or not that will happen, because they've had a few false starts, but it very well could happen.
Their paychecks would have gone up a lot in the intervening 10 years.
Yeah, and fair play. I mean, would I show up for this again? Sure.
I would show up with peeking out between my fingers and like with horror and dread in my stomach.
But I mean, it's the kind of thing, it's a really interesting world, the afterlife. There's so much you can do there.
Yeah, but I kind of feel like this movie is so good at world building and storytelling that like, they kind of showed us it. I don't even know that there's a lot for them to explore. They're like, these are the rules. You've got the handbook. You get 3 turns to visit your like off-world mentor. There's really long waiting queues. You can't leave your house. And after 125 years, whatever happens next. So maybe that's the bit to explore. But like the movie's actually too good. Like they didn't leave a thread of a loose end to explore.
I don't know. I disagree. I think there's...
Unless it opens with Michael Keaton finally getting to the end of that queue because he's on like 9 million.
That would be good.
The end is really good and I truly had forgotten the end when he swaps the ticket
really
and the guy
funny.
Sprinkles the thing over him and his head shrinks. So, but then for the whole next movie, is Michael Keaton have a shrunk head?
I mean, I'm pretty sure they'll rectify that pretty quickly. They can rectify on that very fast.
I'd love if they...
Props if they kept his small head for the entire sequel.
I'd love if they...
While he's surfing.
Did it so lo-fi again and had such bad special effects. The only thing is like, 100% this will be on a streaming service.
Honestly think that would be the only way to do it. Like if it's just an over CGI smorgfest, then I'm kind of like a bit
Is Tim Burton going to direct it though? They'll only do it, presumably.
I don't know. It doesn't say.
I presume if it's what will, if it's not Tim Burton, they'll just both drop out of it again.
It's with Plan. It's produced by Plan B Entertainment and Warner Brothers. So who knows? Warner Brothers can do whatever the fuck they want. Like basically with that Matrix sequel, where they were like, "We're gonna make, you know, the story
no, but
there.
It, no, I
we're
know
gonna
that.
Make this with or without you guys."
No, but specifically, you said Winona Ryder and Michael Keaton said they'd only do it if it was with Tim Burton.
That was in 1991. They said that.
Yeah, but surely they said they won't have changed. Like, she's a millionaire now from Stranger Things.
I don't know, Kathy. I don't have all the answers. I only have a very select number
but
of fun facts.
I guarantee it's always.
And I hope you had fun.
It will go on a streaming service as well. It won't go in the cinemas. I did have fun. Thank you. They were really good facts.
Yeah. Thank you. I did that while we were watching.
I'm very impressed. We don't normally do that, but we're multitasking tonight. And it also kind of helps when you've seen a movie a lot, because you can both research fun facts.
I know.
And
it's
at the same
so
time.
Familiar to me, this movie. And I
Less
really
so
enjoyed
me.
Watching it.
I think you've watched it more than I have. I'm more of a mermaid's gal.
I had the toys. That brings us to the end of that. What a terrible segue. This
yeah,
is the
wow.
End.
Thanks, dude.
This is the end. Please.
This is the end. We're actually dead now. We're
please
recording
take a
this.
Ticket.
We're recording this from the attic.
Imagine
a new family have moved
if
in.
We died in this house. Would we just continue podcasting to nobody into the afterlife?
Well, our house isn't really big enough to kind of continue living to the lifestyle that those two did.
Well, imagine if a new family moves in, but then they start finding our podcasts based on movies they've been watching.
No, what if they start finding our podcast, but it's for movies that came out after we died?
That's what I mean. It's movies they're watching down here, and we're watching it with them.
Are they watching like Straight to Vault?
Then they find.
Are they watching like when it's really Straight to Vault?
They find our audio recordings of them. But it'd be like that bit in The Sixth Sense, you know. Do you remember that awesome bit in The Sixth Sense where he's like listening to a tape of a boy being interviewed, and then he hears something like whispering in the background, and he turns up the volume like super high, and you just hear this ghost like whispering in the background. It'd be like that. So they'll be recording themselves on TikTok or whatever, and then they'll be this. Like, be like, what's
why
this? What's
why are they
what's
moving
that noise? And then they'll turn it up, and it'd be like, oh, I'm so glad you said that, Kathy, because I thought that that's how I said.
Why are they?
It'll so just be us doing a podcast.
So instead of us recording a podcast about movies, the new people who can make TikToks about movies.
Well, I don't know. That's
only
what the
people,
kids will be doing.
Only people who record movie reviews can live in this house, no matter what medium they record them on. No, you're like, hi, I'm Dave, and this is my wife, Kathy, and this
no,
is a podcast
didn't,
where
I'm
we
not saying
haunt
that.
Home for movies. And then after those guys die,
I feel like we're haunting our listeners.
Those
right
guys
now.
Die, then it'll be really awkward because they'll be living up in the attic with us making TikToks while we make the podcast, while someone else is down here making a fucking YouTube show.
That's the future. People just make YouTube shows in their homes, and the ghosts make podcasts. And that is the hell which we all live in.
Would you put a sheet over yourself and cut the eyes out?
Absolutely. Yeah.
There was much spookier things they could have done. Like, they can touch and move physical objects. They should have just been like moving things around the house and like making people feel like they should have been gaslighting people.
It does seem
like you put your cup
of
tea down.
Solutions.
You put your cup of tea down and then they move it. Like, this is the kind of incremental ghost gaslighting I would do.
You're describing the Paranormal Activity vibe.
I'm also describing my own life where I think I'm haunted because nothing I put down is ever where I put it. But also
they haunt people by nothing happening for 20 minutes.
And also we
and
forgot
move,
to talk about their like
open a cupboard door.
The extreme learning curve that they go on, because basically the woman says like, oh, be creative, go haunt them. And next minute they do like a Broadway fucking musical in the living room.
Know,
and like, how are
off.
They moving them all? I think the implication is that
they
can
just
possess
have
people.
Powers. I think, look, I do, like, do you really want to get into
no,
the,
but one of my
they
favorite,
just can do it.
One of my favorite things about the movie is how they just like, and this is fun. This is what made it fun. They just instantly accepted that they were dead and they carried on and started pulling their own heads off and stuff. We didn't have to sit through an existential crisis while they bemoaned the fact
yeah.
that they were dead. So I quite enjoyed that.
This
actually.
Movie does a lot with its 90 minutes.
It keeps it ticking.
It's
keeps
really
it.
Breezy.
I just think there's a lot for them to explore in the sequel, and I look forward to Michael Keaton on
the
surfboard.
Luckily, the sequel will follow today's training. It'll be 2 hours and 45 minutes. And it will contain an unnecessary 30-minute exposition.
No, it would be like the Pentaveret.
How they're able to possess people.
It would be like the Pentaveret. So instead of being like,
it'll be a
maybe,
6-episode series that
yeah,
nobody wants.
Like the Pentaveret could have been a vaguely passable 80-minute movie, but instead it's 6 half-hours. We, by the way, those of you who listen to our TV reviews know that we said we'd watch one episode of the Pentaveret on Netflix. We went back for more. The second is worse.
Yeah, we're out.
And that's what frightens me about previously successful comedians or franchises trying to come back now. can go so wrong. So yeah, and Tim Burton's had a fair few flops now as well, do you know what I mean? What they need now is to get Johnny Depp in as well, and Helena Bonham Carter.
Stop.
And then it would just be brilliant.
Let's end these conversations. Thanks for listening, guys. Let us know. Give us some ideas for more retro movie themes.
But also, if you watched Beetlejuice along with us, what did you think of it? Did it hold up for you? And are you looking forward to the sequel?
And would you watch Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian? Because that sounds like the definition of straight to video, doesn't it?
Yeah. Particularly if it was called Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian. That's not the name.
That's what it was called. That was the title of the sequel.
Oh. I thought you were just saying, oh, Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian. Didn't realize that.
Before it had a screenplay, it had a title. And it was, and I quote, Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian.
That's was it only in the 80s that you'd have had the word goes in a movie title? You'd never hear that now, like.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
Anyway, we digress. Thank you everyone for listening, and
Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian.
See you next month.
Bye.